Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So even if you came to consciousness as in that old grainy time like the 1990s, you may be still old enough to remember science lessons where you learned about the difference between a digital and an analog signal. So the usual explanation goes, well, analog is it's a physical thing, it's transmitted down a wire, and digital is taking as its starting point binary ones and zeros. And when we go from analog to digital, we take an analog signal like the human voice and we make it digital. And when we go from digital to analog, we take a digital signal and we make it analog. Probably the reason that I thought about asking this prompt today is I'm looking at the DAC, for want of anything better to look at. I'm referring to, because there's probably more than one thing called a DAC, a digital audio converter, the little box that sits between something like a media player and a speaker. And, you know, it's got all these funny connections. We see someone's like Tosmark, is that what it's called? That you don't see too much elsewhere. But simple question, Herman and Corin, that I've always wanted to ask. If digital is a native language that computers talk in, so doesn't it make sense to stay digital as far as possible? By which I mean, if we're going from a digital signal, like let's say we're on a let's keep with the TV example, we're watching Netflix, so we're streaming digital audio, and then we're going to send it to a speaker. Now the speaker has to convert that into sound, but wouldn't we want to do that at the last possible step? Like, we're going analog, then we're hitting the speaker in analog. I guess saying this out loud, maybe the answer is that that's the whole point of the DAC, is to take over the role of the worst DAC in the speaker and do the process beforehand. But it's a general question more than a specific one. Digital and analog, is digital always preferable? And when we're thinking about these systems, maybe in the context of a sound system, are there any cases where doing analog relays actually makes more sense?
Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn, and today we are diving into a topic that sits right at the intersection of physics and computer science. It is something that affects almost every moment of our modern lives, yet most of us never give it a second thought.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. I have to say, Korn, this prompt from our housemate Daniel really hit home for me. He was looking at his digital to analog converter, or DAC, and started questioning the very foundation of how we move information from a screen or a file into our ears. It is one of those questions that seems simple on the surface, but opens up a massive rabbit hole of engineering and philosophy.
It really does. Daniel was basically asking, if digital is the native language of computers, why do we ever leave it? Especially with things like streaming Netflix or playing high-resolution music. Why not keep that signal digital until the very last possible millisecond before it hits the speaker?
It is a brilliant question. To understand it, we first have to look at what digital and analog actually represent. When we talk about an analog signal, we are talking about a continuous wave. Think of a literal wave in the ocean or a string vibrating on a guitar. It is smooth, it is infinitely variable, and it is a direct physical representation of the sound.
Right. And digital is essentially a series of snapshots. Instead of a smooth curve, you have a list of numbers that describe where that curve should be at specific points in time. It is like the difference between a film reel, which is a series of still photos played fast, and looking out a window at real life.
That is a perfect analogy. And Daniel is right that for a computer, those numbers are much easier to handle. You can copy them a million times and they never change. You can send them across the world through fiber optic cables, and as long as the ones and zeros arrive in the right order, the data is perfect. Analog, on the other hand, is fragile. Every time you send an analog signal down a wire, it picks up a little bit of noise. It loses a little bit of energy. It is subject to the physical world in a way that digital data just is not.
So if digital is so much more robust, why do we need that DAC box Daniel was looking at? Why can we not just stay in the land of ones and zeros forever?
Because at the end of the day, our ears are analog devices. Our eardrums respond to physical pressure waves in the air. A speaker is a physical object, a cone or a dome, that has to move forward and backward to create those pressure waves. You cannot tell a speaker to move one or zero. You have to tell it to move a specific distance and then another specific distance in a continuous motion.
So the DAC is the translator. It takes that list of numbers and turns it back into a fluctuating electrical voltage that can actually push and pull a speaker.
Exactly. And Daniel's point about staying digital as long as possible is actually the golden rule of modern audio engineering. In the old days, say the 1970s, your signal might start as a physical groove on a record, go through an analog preamp, through an analog mixer, through an analog tape machine, and finally to an analog amplifier. Every single one of those steps added a tiny bit of hiss and distortion.
I remember you telling me about the signal-to-noise ratio. If you have too many analog steps, the noise eventually starts to compete with the music.
Precisely. In a modern setup, like when Daniel is watching Netflix, that audio stays digital through the internet, through the processor in his computer or TV, and often all the way to that external DAC box. The reason people like Daniel use an external DAC instead of the one built into their laptop or phone is all about where and how that conversion happens.
Is that because the inside of a computer is a noisy place, electrically speaking?
You nailed it. A computer is full of high-frequency switching power supplies, buzzing processors, and Wi-Fi radios. All of that creates electromagnetic interference. If you convert your audio to analog inside that messy environment, those tiny fluctuations in voltage are going to pick up that noise. You might hear a faint hiss or even a little whirring sound when your hard drive spins up. By using an external DAC, you keep the signal digital and therefore immune to noise until it is safely outside the computer.
So, to Daniel's question, we do want to stay digital for as long as possible. But he also asked if there are cases where doing analog relays actually makes more sense. I am curious about that. If digital is so clean, why would anyone ever want to go back to analog before they absolutely have to?
This is where it gets really interesting and a bit controversial in the audiophile world. There is a concept called analog summing. In big professional recording studios, even if they record everything digitally, some engineers like to run all those individual digital tracks out through an analog mixing board and then back into the computer.
Wait, so they take a perfect digital signal, turn it into analog just to mix it, and then turn it back into digital? That seems like it would just add noise for no reason.
It does add noise, technically, and it adds distortion. But here is the thing, not all distortion is bad. In the digital world, if you go over the limit, it sounds like terrible, harsh clicking. It is called clipping. But in the analog world, especially with vacuum tubes or transformers, when you push a signal too hard, it rounds off the edges of the waves. It adds what we call even order harmonics. To our human ears, that sounds warm, rich, and pleasant.
So the analog relay in that case is being used as a sort of artistic filter.
Exactly. It is like the difference between a perfectly sharp digital photo and a photo taken on film. The film might have grain and the colors might be slightly off, but many people find the film photo more emotionally resonant. In audio, staying digital is about accuracy, but sometimes analog is about musicality.
I want to go back to Daniel's example of the speaker. He mentioned that the speaker has to convert the signal to sound. I have seen some high-end speakers that actually have a digital input. They take a USB or an optical cable directly into the back of the speaker. Does that mean the DAC is actually inside the speaker cabinet?
Yes, and that is actually becoming the gold standard for high fidelity. These are called active speakers or digital crossovers. If you put the DAC inside the speaker, you can do something incredible. You can use a digital signal processor, or DSP, to perfectly time align the different parts of the speaker.
Explain that a bit more. What do you mean by time align?
Well, a typical speaker has a big woofer for bass and a small tweeter for high notes. Because they are different sizes and shapes, the sound from the tweeter might reach your ear a tiny fraction of a millisecond before the sound from the woofer. In an analog system, correcting that is really hard. But in a digital system, you can just tell the computer to delay the tweeter signal by exactly 12 microseconds.
That is wild. So, by staying digital until the absolute last centimeter, literally inside the speaker box, you can achieve a level of precision that analog components could never dream of.
Precisely. It allows the speaker to compensate for its own physical flaws. It can even compensate for the room it is in. Modern digital speakers use built-in microphones to listen to the room and then adjust the DSP to cancel out echoes or bass booms caused by the walls. You can only do that if you stay in the digital domain as long as possible.
So it sounds like for most people, and for most applications like Daniel's Netflix setup, the answer is yes, stay digital as long as you can. But I am thinking about the edge cases. What about things like volume control? I have heard people say that digital volume control can actually degrade the quality of the sound. Is that true, or is that just an audiophile myth?
That is actually a very real technical issue, though it is becoming less of a problem with 32-bit floating-point processing. Think about it this way. A digital signal has a certain number of bits which represent the dynamic range. If you have a 16-bit signal, which is what a CD uses, that gives you about 96 decibels of range between the quietest and loudest sounds.
Okay, I follow you so far.
If you turn the volume down digitally in an older system, you are basically just shifting those numbers down. You are using fewer bits to represent the sound. If you turn it down low enough, you might only be using 8 or 10 bits of information. Suddenly, you have lost a lot of the detail and you have raised the relative noise floor.
Oh, I see. So if you turn the volume down too much in the digital stage, you are effectively lowering the resolution of your music.
Exactly. This is why many high-end systems still prefer an analog volume control. You keep the digital signal at full strength, so you have the maximum resolution going into the DAC. Then, after the signal is analog, you use a physical resistor, a knob, to turn down the voltage. That way, the resolution stays the same regardless of how quiet it is.
That is a great example of an analog relay making more sense. You use digital for the transport and the processing, but you use analog for the final attenuation to preserve the detail.
Right. Although, I should mention that modern 32-bit DACs have so much headroom that you can turn the volume down digitally by a huge amount before you would ever hear a difference. We are talking about turning it down so quiet that the noise of the air in the room would be louder than the loss of resolution. But in theory, the analog volume control is still superior.
It is funny how these things always come back to the physical reality of our environment. We live in an analog world, so no matter how much we love our ones and zeros, there is always that transition point. I am curious about the history here. When did we really start making this shift? I remember we had CDs in the 80s, but the rest of the chain was still very much analog back then, right?
Oh, absolutely. In the 80s and 90s, the CD player was usually the only digital part of the system. You would have these RCA cables, those red and white plugs, going from the CD player to the amplifier. Those cables are carrying analog signals, so the conversion was happening inside the CD player.
And those were probably not very good converters compared to what Daniel has today.
Not even close. The early DACs had a lot of issues with something called jitter. Jitter is basically when the timing of those digital snapshots is not perfectly consistent. If a sample is supposed to happen every 22 microseconds, but it actually happens at 22.1, it creates a tiny bit of distortion. Early digital audio often sounded harsh or thin because the timing was not perfect. Today, we have femtosecond clocks that are so precise they have effectively eliminated jitter as a human audible problem.
So when did things change? When did we start seeing this push to keep it digital, all the way to a dedicated box like Daniel's?
It really started with the rise of the personal computer as a music hub. When people started playing MP3s and later lossless files from their computers, they realized that the built-in headphone jacks sounded terrible. That led to the explosion of the external USB DAC market in the mid-2000s. Suddenly, you could bypass all the cheap electronics inside your computer and send a clean digital stream to a high-quality device on your desk.
It is interesting to think about how much engineering goes into that one little moment of conversion. Daniel's box is essentially doing millions of math problems every second to make sure that the voltage it outputs matches those digital instructions perfectly.
It is staggering. If you are listening to a standard high-resolution file, say 96 kHz, that DAC is updating its output voltage 96,000 times every second, and it has to be accurate to within a few billionths of a volt. If it is off by even a tiny bit, the shape of the wave changes and the sound changes.
This makes me think about the other side of Daniel's question. Are there ever times when a digital signal is actually worse than an analog one? I am thinking about things like latency. In live music, for example, does the time it takes to convert from analog to digital and back again cause problems?
You hit on a massive pain point for musicians. Every time you go through a converter, it takes a few milliseconds. If you are a guitar player and you plug into a digital processor, and then that goes into a digital mixer, and then into a digital wireless monitor system in your ear, those milliseconds start to add up.
I imagine that would be incredibly disorienting. It would be like hearing an echo of yourself every time you hit a note.
It is. If the latency gets above about 10 or 15 milliseconds, it becomes almost impossible to play. This is one area where analog still reigns supreme. An analog signal travels through a wire at nearly the speed of light. There is effectively zero latency. That is why many professional recording studios still use analog monitoring systems. The singer hears their voice through an analog path, so there is no delay, even if the recording itself is being done digitally.
That is a perfect example of an analog relay being preferable. It is not about the sound quality in that case. It is about the physics of time.
Exactly. And there is another niche where analog is still the king, and that is in very high power applications. Think about a massive concert at a stadium. You are pushing thousands of watts of power to those speakers. At that level, the final amplification stage is always analog. We have seen a rise in Class D amplifiers, which are very efficient, but even those work by rapidly switching an analog voltage using things like gallium nitride transistors. You cannot escape the need for high-voltage analog electronics to move that much air.
So Daniel's intuition was mostly right. For his home theater or his desk setup, staying digital as long as possible is the best way to avoid noise and maintain precision. But there is still this beautiful, messy world of analog that we need for things like volume control, live performance, and the sheer physical power of a big speaker.
Right. And I think it is important to mention that the transition from digital to analog is not just a technical hurdle. It is where the character of the sound is born. Two different DACs can take the exact same digital file and make it sound slightly different. One might use a different type of filter to smooth out the steps between the samples. Another might use a tube output stage to add that warmth we talked about.
So even though the input is just math, the output is art.
I love that. Yes, exactly. Digital gives us the perfect container, but analog is the actual wine we drink.
You know, thinking about this makes me realize why some people are so obsessed with vinyl records again. It is not that they are more accurate. We know they are not. They have surface noise, they have limited dynamic range, and they wear out over time. But by staying analog from the performance to the disc to the ear, you are maintaining a physical connection to the music that digital, by its very nature, breaks.
That is a very poetic way of putting it. When you look at a vinyl record under a microscope, you can literally see the physical shape of the music. It is a one-to-one physical map of the sound wave. When you play a digital file, you are playing a mathematical approximation. Now, that approximation is so good today that it is effectively perfect to the human ear. But for some people, the idea of the physical map is more appealing.
It is the difference between a handwritten letter and an email. The email is more efficient, it is more accurate, and it arrives instantly. But the handwritten letter has the physical imprint of the person who wrote it.
That is a great analogy. But to bring it back to Daniel's practical situation, if he is watching Netflix, he is already starting with a compressed digital stream. Netflix uses codecs like Dolby Digital Plus or Atmos. They are already throwing away a lot of the data to make the file small enough to stream over the internet.
So in that case, is a high-end DAC even worth it if the source material is already compromised?
It is a bit like putting high-performance tires on a budget car. You will still feel a difference, but you are limited by the engine. However, a good DAC will still ensure that you are hearing exactly what Netflix sent you without adding any extra noise from your computer's motherboard. It is about preserving the integrity of whatever you have.
I think this is a good moment to talk about what people can actually do with this information. If someone is listening to this and thinking about their own setup, what are the practical takeaways?
The first thing is, if you are using the headphone jack on your laptop or a cheap dongle for your phone, you are likely using a very inexpensive DAC. Upgrading to even a $50 external DAC can make a noticeable difference in the clarity and the background silence of your music.
And if you are setting up a home theater like Daniel, try to use digital connections like HDMI or optical as deep into the system as you can. If your receiver has a good DAC, let it do the work instead of your Blu-ray player or your computer.
Exactly. And if you are an aspiring musician or podcaster, pay attention to that latency we talked about. Look for an audio interface that has a direct monitor feature. That is basically an analog relay that lets you hear yourself before the computer processes the sound. It will make your performance feel much more natural.
It is fascinating how these two worlds, the digital and the analog, have to work in such perfect harmony. We often think of them as being in competition, like the old analog versus digital debates of the 90s. But really, they are partners. Digital is the perfect librarian, keeping everything organized and safe. And analog is the performer that actually brings the music to life.
Well said, Korn. And I think we are seeing a trend where the line between them is blurring. We have things like Class D amplifiers that use digital techniques to handle analog power. We have speakers that use digital brains to control analog drivers. The future is not one or the other. It is a seamless integration of both.
I have to ask, Herman, do you think we will ever get to a point where we do not need the analog part at all? I mean, could we ever have a direct neural interface where the digital signal goes straight into our brain?
Wow, jumping straight to the sci-fi ending. Technically, even then, your neurons are analog devices. They use electrochemical gradients to fire. So you would still need a converter at the end of the wire. It would just be a biological one instead of a speaker cone. The physics of the universe is fundamentally continuous, at least on the scales we experience. As long as we are biological creatures, we will always need that final analog step.
That is a humbling thought. We can build the fastest computers in the world, but they still have to talk to us in the language of the physical world.
Exactly. And that is why Daniel's little DAC box is so important. It is the bridge between the world of pure logic and the world of human experience.
I think that is a perfect place to wrap up the technical side of this. It has been a really enlightening look at something I usually take for granted. Daniel, thanks for sending that in. It definitely gave us a lot to chew on.
It really did. And hey, if you are listening and you have your own weird questions about the tech in your house or the way the world works, send them our way. We love digging into this stuff.
Absolutely. And if you're enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find us and keeps the show growing. We have been doing this for over 600 episodes now, and it is the community that keeps us going.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. You can find all our past episodes and a way to get in touch at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We also have an RSS feed there if you want to subscribe directly.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will catch you in the next episode.
Goodbye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.